As of right now, we are at war.
How desperate you call on such lost creatures to defend you.
How desperate am I? You threaten my world with war. You steal a force you can't hope to control. You talk about peace and you kill because it's fun. You have made me very desperate. You might not be glad that you did. There was an idea. Bring together a group of remarkable people, see if they can become something more. Like the battles that we never could.
Welcome to Fury's Finest, a podcast about Marvel Crisis Protocol and the Marvel Universe. My name is Jesse Aiken, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Bruffett. How are you doing today, Chris?
Jesse, I'm feeling great, man. I am very excited to record this episode today. Very excited to embark on episode number 101.
That's right.
After posting our 100th episode last week. So I'm looking forward to the next 100.
I couldn't agree more. We hope you guys enjoyed that 100th episode. It was quite the undertaking to plan, record, produce, and edit. And we're really proud of it, Chris. Like, it's a long episode for us. It's longer than we're comfortable with in our normal format, but kind of had to be done because we went through 107 characters on the air, and it was really fun to do. But today we're back in our Midnight Sun series like normal. We're back in the normal format of the show, and it feels really good to be back because we're right here on the wire, Chris, of pre-mini extravaganza, and we're gonna have a lot of news segments covering that. So this is kind of the final calm before the storm, like we talked about before. We're kind of just gonna talk about Moon Knight. We're gonna keep talking about the Midnight Suns, and then we're gonna have a ton of mini extravaganza stuff that's gonna sideline the Midnight Suns for a bit, but we'll be back.
We'll get there.
But I mentioned the Midnight Suns. And today we're talking about Moon Knight, a very special character in the Midnight Suns and a very special character currently in Marvel and the MCU. So the timing on this seems really correct, Chris, because his show just ended on Disney Plus. We highly recommend it, and we're going to talk about it on the show soon. But we're covering Moon Knight today in lore and strategy on Fury's Finest. I think we just need to get right into business.
Fury's Finest is supported by Discount Games, Inc. Go to DiscountGamesInc.com for all your Marvel Crisis Protocol needs.
Our patrons support Fury's Finest at Patreon.com/Fury's Finest. If you enjoy the show, consider supporting us with a monthly contribution at Patreon.com/Fury's Finest. When you join, you immediately get to join our Discord community and be part of that. And it's really exciting because we have a lot of things going on with Secret Wars 3 about to start. And we also have the painting contest with no name and process on top of just the normal community happenings on our Discord. So if you join Patreon, make sure your Patreon is linked with your Discord and you will immediately get added into our patron Discord.
This week, we have a very special shout out to our patron of the week, Mauricio D. Mauricio, thank you.
Thank you. It means a lot. And Mauricio is a very active person on the patron.
He's Discord. Awesome.
Chris, we cannot do this episode without our Avenger-level producers, Zach Attack, Rusty, Dr. D. Dillon, Nathan, and Brian. Thank you, Avenger-level producers.
Thank you so much, guys.
All right, Chris, let's get straight into Moon Knight lore.
Moon Knight is a really interesting character. He's introduced in Werewolf by Night number 32 in August of 1975. He's created by Doug Mensch and Don Perlin. And he's just there for two issues. And he is introduced originally as a villain. He was never slated to show up in Marvel comic canon again. He was kind of a throwaway, appear twice villain, but the fan base really loved Moon Knight. And so he got brought back, and he got brought back until he got his own series. And the thing here is, Moon Knight, much like his first appearance, I really think for a long time the character really suffered from that same kind of indecision that his first appearance kind of brought, his whole incarnation brought. because every different volume of Moon Knight is going to bring a new vision of the character by a new writer. In the 80s, he is Marvel's Batman. You know, in the 80s, he is very much a regular superhero. He uses these disguises, these alternate personalities, quote unquote. They're really just characters he comes up with to further his crime fighting. And, you know, as volumes go, this gets morphed and morphed and morphed. And eventually we will get to something similar to the Moon Knight we saw on screen recently. So a little more kind of in-depth, a little about the character than we usually do here. But I think this lore episode is going to be a little different.
Okay, so with that said, Chris, what are Moon Knight's superpowers?
Well, like most Marvel superheroes, so something you're going to constantly see being in descriptions of them is, especially the ones B-list, C-list stuff, you're going to see Olympic-level athlete.
Okay.
Moon Knight is an Olympic-level athlete. He's an expert hand-to-hand combatant, as you could have guessed. Most notably, studied a lot of boxing. He is a trained Marine. He was a mercenary for a time. A very highly trained and skilled combatant. And of course, when he is Moon Knight, when he has the powers of Khonshu, of course, has some healing powers. He is his strength, agility, speed, all very much increased. He has a lot of resistance to psychic attacks as Moon Knight, thanks to Khonshu, and then, you know, maybe whatever mental health things he does or does not have, depending on who's writing him. A lot of time he uses the throwing crescents, much like a batarang. For a time, Moon Knight was using just guns for a while. He's done a lot, and his powers kind of change based on who's riding him and what they need. But for the most part, he's going to be stronger, faster, superhuman strength, going to have some healing properties on top of being a highly skilled fighter and combatant before gaining powers.
All right, Chris, so I think we just got to learn about his history, because he's got a lot.
He's got a lot, and we're not going to cover it all. We'll touch on some things. But like I said, this character's been around since 1975, and at time of recording, we're on Moon Knight Volume 9, and he's not a very super popular character. A lot of these volumes get canceled 10, 12 issues in, so he's been rebooted and kind of remixed and reimagined many times. Let's start off with Moon Knight's origin. He is born in Chicago, Illinois. He is the son of a Jewish-American rabbi named Elias Spector. Birth name is Mark Spector. Elias originally survives and escapes Nazi persecution, and this is kind of a driving force for Mark growing up. He many times resented his father for kind of fleeing Nazi oppression and fleeing Nazi Germany to America instead of staying and fighting. So this is kind of what drives Mark to get into boxing when he's a young man. He's going to get into boxing. When his story is first published, his origin story, I think, came out in 1980. He enlists in the Marines, and I believe he fights in Korea or something. Of course, that gets re-updated to him fighting in Desert Storm later on. While serving as a mercenary, this is where he's going to meet Jean-Paul Frenchy Duchamp, who's his longtime kind of personal pilot and friends. His brother, Randall Spector, also a mercenary, serving with him, but for much different reasons, kind of more of a driven by violence and anger kind of person, actually kills Mark's girlfriend, Lisa, and Mark and Randall will have, clearly they'll get into it. Mark will leave him for dead. He was dead for a long time, but he will later come back. Now, eventually, Frenchy and Mark are going to meet Raoul Bushman, who's impressed with them. And Raoul Bushman is a very, very famous and accomplished mercenary in the Marvel universe. And he offers a contract to Mark and Jean-Paul. They will accept this contract to work with Bushman. They work with Bushman, helping a local warlord in Sudan to quell a rebellion. But things will very quickly change as Bushman is a true supervillain, lacks any empathy, ruthless, amoral, kills for the sake of killing. Of course, Mark Spector and Frenchie do not stand for this. Mark will confront Bushman. Bushman will defeat him, and Mark will be laid in front of a statue of the Egyptian god Khonshu, where Khonshu will offer the deal of Mark Spector becoming his avatar, becoming the Moon Knight. In return, he will be brought back to life. Mark takes the deal, dons the cloak and the hood, confronts Bushman again, defeats him with the power of Khonshu, and then decides to become a superhero. That will bring us to his first appearance in Werewolf by Night.
Also, Chris, now he is an indentured servant of some sort to Khonshu, which is a big part of
the absolutely
storyline.
Is.
That was part of the deal.
That is part of the deal. He serves Khonshu for life now, and that will, through his history, kind of come and go. And like I said, guys, he has been reintroduced and killed and been made a very mentally ill person, and then the 2 years later, that is taken away and then reintroduced sometime after that. So I'm going to touch on some things, but we're going to really focus in on the more modern version of Moon Knight. Now, originally, of course, Mark is aided by Jean-Paul, Frenchie, and Marlene. Marlene, of course, will be his initial love interest, and they're kind of a team. So what Mark Spector does in these early days, after getting his first comic book, Volume 1 of Moon Knight, Mark is going to smartly invest his mercenary money, and he is going to become semi-wealthy. So, of course, these three would kind of act as a unit. They were kind of based in New York. Mark's driving a cab. He's a movie star. He's a rich playboy. It's very similar to Batman in the sense that these are not like personalities in Mark. They are disguises he dons early on. This will be something that changes later. But early on, these are, you know, he becomes Stephen Grant. He becomes Jake Lockley as kind of an undercover disguise. These are not separate people in his head. This is purely to aid him in crime fighting. Now, following Marvel switching to the direct sales model, they used Moon Knight as one of those titles to try to force people to stop buying from newsstands and going to comic shops. So you could only find the Moon Knight titles in comic shops. This would lead to it, of course, being canceled because sales plummeted. And this would see Moon Knight joining the West Coast Avengers. He did not function well as a team. He would kind of form his initial kind of villain at this point would be No Shoes' rival god, Seth. He has a brief romantic relationship with Tigra during this time, but largely not a ton of character development here, other than Moon Knight really just is best as a lone wolf. Does not work well with teams. His next book would be Mark Spector Moon Knight, Volume 1. This would run from 1989 to 1994. This is more Mark Spector and Moon Knight being a classic superhero. He's going to interact with a lot of other superheroes during this time, based in New York, so he's going to run through all of that. And the end of this run is going to see him sacrificing himself to defeat Seth. So Moon Knight is killed off, and he's just gone for a while. So during volumes 3 and 4 of Moon Knight, you're going to start seeing a lot more of the mental instability kind of coming in. Going to start hinting at things. We're going to start leaning towards DID. But it's still Moon Knight just kind of being Moon Knight. He's a superhero, man.
You said DID, Chris. You mean dissociative identity disorder, of course, which is the beginnings of Moon Knight's mental illness. Tenets of his character is where this is starting.
They are 100% tenets of the character at this point, and kind of a slow develop. They've been hinted at, or they've been brought in just to be kind of retconned by the next writer, you know, here and there, sometimes in the same series at this point. But now that we're getting to Moon Knight Volume 5, and this is going to be in 2006, is when this is going to start. And this is where we're really going to see the beginning. Moon Knight's going to come in. The violence has already been jacked up a little bit in the 90s, but in 2006, we're really going to go for it. So this is where we're going to get more of that Jake Lockley side that they're really playing into in the latest Disney Plus show, the violence of Jake Lockley. We're really going to get that here. And Charlie Houston was really, the writer of Volume 5, is just really pressing this violence angle. He's really trying to ratchet that up. But of course, the book will get canceled kind of out of nowhere. And then we're going to get Volume 6. And this is where I think it really begins. This is where Bendis takes a stab at Moon Knight. Bendis and Alex Maleev. And of course, you guys know I love Alex Maleev's art. But Bendis is going to write the first 6 issues, I think it is, I believe, of Moon Knight Volume 6. And he's really going to introduce this idea of, whether through Khonshu or just through life, Mark Spector is suffering from DID. He's going to introduce this Wolverine personality, this Spider-Man personality, this Captain America personality that Mark legitimately thinks is there talking to him, fighting these villains with him. But instead, it's very Fight Club-esque in the sense that it's Mark talking to nothing and instead acting out these actions and kind of viewing them from afar when he's not the dominant personality or whatever. And that really is going to get kicked up here. Bendis will leave the book after I think it's 6 or something issues. Colin Bunn would take over, and I love Colin Bunn. And then we're going to see a lot of people's favorite character be introduced with Warren Ellis's Volume 7, and that is Mr. Knight. That is where we're going to get the detective, the kind of noir thing going on of Mr. Knight aiding the police and just walking around being dapper, white suit, white mask. He wants villains to be afraid that he's coming. He doesn't care that they know.
Well, Mr. Knight's almost also a alter ego of Moon Knight, you know, in a way too. It's a unique opportunity in this writing style to introduce not just a different facet of the character, but different shaded the personality of this character. It's very unique in the Moon Knight universe to do that.
Moon Knight would play a role in Avengers versus X-Men, teaming up with a small team of Avengers. And something that's notable here is that Moon Knight will grab Rogue. And of course, we all know that Rogue can absorb some power. And when she does that, memories and life force through skin-to-skin contact. And Rogue experiences temporary madness as she absorbs all the perspective of Mark's different alter egos. It's just something I think is very interesting. So this, of course, is the Avengers versus X-Men event in 2012. So we're getting very modern here. So we're really talking about the character has really kind of finally settled, and he is mad. And whether that's due to Khonshu or not, we're not entirely sure, but we're there. And I think it's important to note. So after Avengers versus X-Men, of course, Moon Knight's book is canceled. Why wouldn't it be? So this is going to bring us to just the excellent and number one recommended reading. Moon Knight Volume 7 comes out in 2014. This is written by Warren Ellis. This is the one. This is the one. This is the one where Moon Knight is going to wake up in a mental hospital. And really, the whole book is framed by whether this mental hospital that he's in is real, or whether his memories are real, or the alternate experiences away from this mental hospital are real. It's very cool. And the Disney Plus show drew a lot of inspiration from this volume in a lot of different ways. And I think it's pretty important, and it's very fun. And I'm going to wrap up this kind of, really, admittedly, kind of a weird lore section by talking about Moon Knight Volume 8, another one of my favorites, another one I think you should read. Very similar, dealing with a lot of mental instability and mental hospital. This one is written by Jeff Lemire, penciled and inked by Greg Smallwood. Amazing art all through the run. This run really had me fall in love with Greg Smallwood's art. Absolutely. And Jeff Lemire is just a wonderful writer. It's a very charming run. It's a very interesting exploration of the Moon Knight character. And I would really highly recommend that you read it. This one is also going to have a lot of inspiration drawn from it for the Moon Knight Disney Plus series, especially kind of Avatar versus Avatar. Very fun. I guess you would say the Ethan Hawke's character is kind of derived from this. Moon Knight is getting published still. Moon Knight Volume 9 has launched in 2021. There's also a new series that's very interesting, very cool, Moon Knight Black, White, and Red. Check that out if you can find it. But, you know, Jesse, kind of what I want to hammer home here is that Moon Knight is a character that's hard to nail down. He's been really searching for footing, I would say, his entire existence. And almost, he's been around for almost 50 years at this point. We're closing in on it. So The fact that he's just really found his footing since, you know, the mid-2010s, yeah, in the last decade, I think really shows a lot. And I think he's a character that has a lot of potential in Marvel going forward now that he's kind of found his stride. But yeah, that's really kind of what I want to leave you guys with, is that Moon Knight has been a character searching for a long time. And I would highly recommend you check out anything written past 2011 involving Moon Knight. That's volume 6, 7, 8, 9, Black, White, and Red. I think it's Black, White, and Blood, actually. But yeah, very, very good stuff.
So what you're saying, Chris, is that Moon Knight's a very complex character and they've had a hard time writing him. But you touched on a couple of his pillars of his character, which I want to ask you real quick while we're here.
Yeah, please.
You mentioned he has a lot of similarities with Bruce and Batman.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, let's just get some of the obvious things out of the way. They have a similar power set pre the Khonshu modification, right?
But well, you know, Batman's essentially a metahuman.
Yeah, that's true at this point, of course.
At this point, he is.
But let's just talk about the essences of them. I mean, they are these sort of caped vigilantes that throw batarangs, that jump from rooftop to rooftop.
And they love the night.
Justice.
Yes, they're driven by this high moral code, though Moon Knight has personalities that do not have that same moral code that Mark Spector does. You don't really see that with Batman. Batman's mental health is more in his obsession and more in his split personality as Batman and Bruce Wayne. His mask is Bruce Wayne.
Of course.
So they deal with similar issues, and Batman is a lot more understated with the mental health kind of stuff. But
of course,
yeah, they are very, very similar characters. I think the big major difference is Moon Knight wears white.
That's true. And he's also the avatar of Khonshu, an actual Egyptian god. And he gets sometimes, as you would mention, Chris, in the show many times, the writer will use that as a story element to help accelerate the plot or make things happen because he is powered by a god and that it gives you different things. Okay, so yeah, we got white versus black suit, but similar cape, everything. It's all there.
Especially in the 80s, man. You've got you've got the Hollywood playboy kind of aspect going, the rich public figure kind of thing going on, then the nighttime personalities, ear to the ground, getting information from the streets stuff going on. It's just they're just so similar in a lot of ways, and I'm glad now that Moon Knight has really got his own lane, because he just didn't for a long time.
Well, now they've pursued the mental health thing even more, and his personality, his split personality, is even more with the DID, as you mentioned multiple times.
Yes, sir. Which, yes, sir.
You know, in old slang, an old DSM, pre DSM 5 would be, you know, the pop culture word for that is multiple personality disorder, which is not the correct word for that. But him having dissociative identity disorder, that can create different avenues for the character entirely. I mean, things like that even extend to what we said, the Mr. Knight sort of persona, which is a persona of his superhero persona.
So cool, man.
Yeah, it's great.
The idea and the way that they always illustrate that suit with minimal shading and always thick black lines.
Clean.
Very cool, man. Very cool.
So he's a complex character. We hope they gave you a good idea of what he's like. And let's go and talk about him in the MCU. So Moon Knight's in the MCU now. Chris, he's had a full-fledged season one of a show, which is very exciting. Played by Oscar Isaac.
Brilliantly.
Brilliantly played by Oscar Isaac. Absolutely. And without getting spoilers of the show, because we will be covering this on our show soon, but in the Moon Knight show, we are dropped in as the Steven personality, and we don't see Mark for some time.
Hey, look, man, I think this is consistent with the character. New writers, new vision.
I like it. It's a really cool way to set the scene, honestly. You know, Steven first.
I disagree with you there, but we'll get into that more. later. I didn't love the choice personally, but ultimately the show was good. So I'm not really, it's a very small nitpick. I'll just say that.
Everybody wins. Yeah. So Oscar Isaac does an incredible job. And of course the rest of the cast is incredible as well, which we're going to get to in our episode because there's a lot there, Chris.
There's a lot there. Ethan Hawke rules.
Ethan Hawke is just, I told you, he's one of my main guys. We talked about this a while ago, and he continues to deliver. Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke steal the show.
Absolutely.
But Mae Calloway as Layla is great. And then on top of that, Chris, we have F. Murray Abraham as Khonshu, almost giving a Optimus Prime level performance.
He did really well with that voice
of Peter Cullen's repertoire, honestly.
Really conveyed a lot of the story and the feelings of Khonshu through the voice and the inflections. Honestly, very impressive.
An incredible performance and an incredibly important part of Moon Knight's characters, so it had to be delivered in the show. And same with Ethan Hawke as playing Arthur Harrow and Mae playing Layla, of course. So I mean, important parts of the character, and we'll get to that in our show.
We will
soon. But Oscar Isaac kills it, multiple personalities and Moon Knight, and I'm really excited to see what more he can do in the MCU, because, you know, Chris, we talk about fandoms a lot, we talk about issues of fandoms, people want more and more and more, but like, if you think about this, the greatest things about these shows is like, they are giving us a long form Iron Man 1.
It's true. We're getting this long form story where we get to really stay in the universe and stay with the character.
And still just an origin story, right?
Essentially, this was an origin story, yeah.
That's typically what these are.
This really was.
And I think that's pretty neat, right? That we get a long form, like 6 or 7 hour Iron Man 1 instead of a 2 hour Iron Man 1. But people get really fixated on, I want to see Moon Knight doing X and Y in this timeline and this storyline. And they don't realize that's planned for much further in the future. This was actually just truly a character study and a origin story. And that's basically it. And that's actually a strong directorial and writing decision that I really appreciate.
Wow. Very well said, Jesse. I hadn't considered it through that exact lens. That was very good, man. That was good.
I mean, I appreciate that. But I mean, it's more just, Chris, sometimes we have to step back as fans, you know, and we have to realize like what serves the story and what serves the character for new audiences. And as you just said, this is Moon Knight with new writers. This is not exactly the Moon Knight we know.
He's different with every new writer, man. Like,
let it breathe, you know, let him get to know him.
100%. Let it breathe. Let the character develop. I have a feeling that if season two, if we get it or a movie or whatever, if they can pull it off and it really strikes a chord, Moon Knight's going to have a new kind of status quo all over again. So it's just, like you said, it's a wait and see. Let the story breathe and let's see where it goes.
I think he's going to be huge, honestly.
We'll see. I know there's that potential. That potential is definitely there.
So Chris, closing out our lore section, you always talk about your comics and you've mentioned them several times in passing here, but let's just get a concrete name here to bookend this strategy section. What's your comic book recommendation today for Moon Knight?
I'm going to recommend two books here. I think I would really love it if you guys could check out Moon Knight Volume 7 by Warren Ellis, penciled by Declan Shavy. Now, I do understand that Warren Ellis has had some problematic things here in the recent past, but he does seem to be on the right path of making amends and owning up to his behavior. So I am of the view that we should kind of celebrate that. So give this one a chance. It's very cool. And then the next one, of course, is going to be Moon Knight Volume 8 by Jeff Lemire and Greg Smallwood. Gorgeous book, well written. Please check it out.
Those are great recommendations, Chris. And of course, you already sang the praises of Bendis and Malieve before that. So there's plenty of content we can pull from
here. If you want more Moon Knight, go check out Volume 6, of course. And then past that, it's going to be...
just keep going.
Super different. Any Moon Knight volume you pull out is going to be a different interpretation of the character, which for some of you, that's going to be really fun. So if that is you, yeah, let me know. Hit me up. Tell me how it goes.
Awesome, Chris. Well, let's move on to Moon Knight and Marvel Crisis Protocol. All right, so we're in strategy. Moon Knight is a three-threat character in this game. His name is Moon Knight. His alter ego is Mark Spector. On his healthy side, he has a stamina of 5, a move of medium on a small base, a height of 2, like normal, and a threat costs of 3. His defenses are 3 physical, 3 energy, 3 mystic, and Chris, what do you know, on his injured side, he has a stamina of 5, putting him right at that average 3 threat defenses and stamina and movement.
You know what that means, Jesse? Lots of text.
It means he's got cool stuff coming. And we're going to do something a little different today, like we've done from time to time on this show. We're not going to read his attacks first. We're going to read his most important innate superpower first, which is multiple personalities, because this is going to frame how we think of this character. Because Chris, this character is very different. He's a solid baseline 3 threat characters, but then this superpower that's an innate superpower, there's a whole wrench in the entire thing, and it makes him genuinely very different.
It's what sets him apart. It's what drives how you place him. Yeah, man, sometimes you just have to frame a character. So this innate power is multiple personalities. At the start of Moon Knight's activation, roll 1 die. If the result is a critical, Moon Knight may take an additional action this turn, but it must be a move action. If the result is a wild or a hit, the next attack made during this activation adds 2 dice to its attack roll. If the result is a defense or a blank, Moon Knight gains 1 power. If the result is a skull, there is no effect. Incredible. Incredibly high variance. It is impossible to know what you're going to get, so therefore it's impossible to plan exactly what your next move is going to be with him.
Absolutely.
So what do you have to do, Jesse? You've got to put him in a spot where he can react.
That's true. Be in a point where he wants to be and net some more economy or actions out of this. Yeah, it's really great, Chris. I mean, 7 out of 8 results on the dice is nice odds. That's very high that you're going to get something positive. Now, a lot of these are, you know, they're funny where it's like, oh, round 1 of the game, I roll a wild. Well, I get 2 additional attack dice round 1, but no one's in range. That happens, you know, but also round 1, you could just roll the shield or blank and just get the Asgardian for round 1. You can interact with 2 objectives, like if you really want to. It's crazy.
What a terrible thing to be able to do.
What a terrible thing. Looking at you, Danny Rand, with your availability to do that
round 1.
But honestly, this is one of those things, like Moon Knight is just a solid 3 threat. And then in the hands of a experienced player that knows this game and knows their matchups well, they can do a lot with this multiple personality stuff, because they can be like, okay, I rolled a crit, which is one of the toughest ones to get. You get a 3rd free action that's a move. Wonderful. You could double move and then attack. That's very unusual that you're sort of getting around things without a charge, right? Like Moon Knight's doing that. So it's one of those things. I mean, you could even do stuff like move, attack, move. You know, let's mention, it's no slouch that he has a crazy personality here, which I'm assuming is the Jake personality, which is a wild or hit. He gets 2 more dice. That takes his attacks up to 4 threat level attacks, or even 5 threat level attacks in some instances. So you've got to think about how you play him. And there's a reason he's fragile with his health and his defenses, because if he was really defensive on top of this, he'd probably be too strong. Let's just be real.
He absolutely would, because look, he's got some good attacks. And he's got more than that. I'm just going to go through his innate superpowers right here, right now.
Sure, yeah.
Because his next one is stealth. So, of course, just a refresher, you must be within range 3 of Moon Knight to target him with attacks.
That helps him.
With stealth. That's very big. He's got wall crawler. That's huge. If you roll a crit turn 1 on a heavy density map.
Triple move, yeah.
You're anywhere you want to be, baby.
That's right. Great points, Chris. Absolutely great points. And let's also not forget the synergy with his stealth and wall crawler with this free move, with some of the ways you want to play him, where you're like, okay, well, he doesn't really have defensive tech. I want to keep him safe, so I will spend actions to move him away, you know, force opponents to come to his range, which is very cool. And his last superpower, Chris, is reactive superpower called Chosen of Noshu. It costs 2 power. When Moon Knight is targeted by a mystic attack, he can use a superpower. Add 2 dice to his character's defense against that attack. This character cannot be advanced, pushed, or placed by the effects of the attack. So he actually has a little bit of wizard, mystic, psychic defense and tech from the meta, which is very cool.
On a 3 threat that's already got the boons that he has, Chosen of Khonshu is a really nice tool, and do not underestimate that last sentence. Moon Knight cannot be advanced, pushed, or placed by the effect of this attack. That will not stop you from being moved by like a Jean Grey, who moves away from attacks. She moves you with a superpower.
Yeah.
But this is, like you said, just a really nice little piece of anti-mage tech.
Oh yeah. Lots of mages move you with their attacks.
They didn't have to put this on the kit. He was already good, but it's on here because of the lore. And I think that's great. And it's just this little bonus that's really helps him stand out as a very versatile three threat.
Yeah. Quentin Beck is not moving him with his strikes. But on top of that, Chris, the theme of this, super cool. Khonshu is just fortifying his mind, quite literally, preventing any sort of lesser being from getting in there and, you know, controlling Mark, essentially. But I think it's time we get into Mark's attacks, because he has three and they all are very different.
His first attack, Jesse, is a physical attack. It is bow staff. Range 2, strength 4, power cost of 0. After this attack is resolved, Moon Knight gains power equal to the damage dealt. Additionally, Moon Knight may reroll any number of attack dice for this attack. And now we're going to get to the big reason you might want to take a chance and reroll some dice here. On a critical, wild, and hit, you will trigger stagger. After this attack is resolved, the target character gains the stagger special condition. And guys, keep in mind that on some certain rolls, this goes up to a 6 dice attack with rerolls.
Of course, Chris is referring to that multiple personality where you get those additional dice. And this gets crazy because it's a 6 dice strike, which is great in itself. Just absolutely great. But then you add multiple rerolls. It's probably one of the better strikes in the game for building power at that point. In a weird way, you're better than Laura. You're better than Zemo, because you've got a 6 dice attack with a bunch of rerolls. Now, of course, can't modify skulls, which is a problem. But if you get crit wild hit, which it seems very unlikely on the 4 dice, but much more likely on the 6 dice, you will give them stagger, which is huge. Chris. Like, you could walk up and stagger Hulk with this, and Moon Knight's done his job for the game. Seriously.
You're not wrong, man.
Because now he's going to go run away and score on a point, and at least he denied a 6 threat character half of their entire activation, right? So do not underestimate this bow staff. The range 2 is rough. Physical is rough. We know this. But watch him. When he gets those 2 more dice, this can spike. And that's what's very cool about this character. You don't necessarily know how he's going to perform. And the longer he's in a game, the more multiple personality rules he gets and more viable he gets as the game goes on. So keep that in mind.
As hard as he is to plan a turn out for, he's just as hard for your opponent to plan for. And I think that's a wonderful way to capture the lore in a rule. Just brilliantly and elegantly executed. Very impressed. So let's talk about his next attack, Jesse.
Yeah, his next attack, Chris, is another physical attack called Throwing Crescents. It's range 4 physical attack, which is very nice. Also 4 dice again. Power cost of 0. After this attack is resolved, Moon Knight gains 1 power. So this is a gainer, not a builder. We've talked about this before. But it has rapid fire. As long as you get 1 hit after the sacrifice is resolved, you trigger rapid fire. Moon Knight may make 1 additional Throwing Crescents attack, and it must target the original target. The second attack does not have the rapid fire special rule. We've talked about in this game how strong rapid fire is, because more attacks is better than bigger dice pools in this game. Something we've learned over time, because the dice do spike, the dice do fail. So more attacks is better. And this is another case, Chris, of let's talk about that Jake personality. If that Jake personality comes out, mm-hmm. you get 2 more dice this turn. It's 6 dice rapid fire for 1 action. You're only building 2 power off of it because you're doing it twice. But yeah, this is really cool, Chris. And let's talk about some very cool synergy with his kit with this. This is probably going to do with him most of the time, because Throwing Crescents is very well designed and developed by the devs. Thank you, devs. Range 4, which is outside his stealth range of range 3. So he can actually throw crescents outside of that stealth range, and you have to come to him. And now you've come to him, and now he just hits you with a normal strike with the bow staff and might stagger you. So there is a give and take there for your opponent, which I find very cool.
Or perhaps Moon Knight has 4 power available to him. That's when you step into that range 3 to get an attack off. And then, Jesse, he's going to do this. It is Avatar of Khonshu. It is his 3rd attack. It is a mystic attack.
I love that it's mystic so much. Let's just get that
Me
out
too,
of
man.
Khonshu's just coming in.
As I mentioned, it is range 3, strength 7, power cost of 4. After this attack is resolved, place Moon Knight within range one of the target character. More movement, more sneaky movement on this character.
Teleport, yeah.
You also just get to push. No trigger. You just get to do it if the target character is size two or less before damage is dealt. It may be pushed away from Moon Knight short. That's where the four power comes in. That's what you're paying for on a three threat character with the kit he's already got. It's pricey. It can score you some points.
It could also be nine dice, right?
Yes.
So let's talk about a couple cool things with this ability. We've talked about before the power of flying kick on Danny Rand, just teleporting somewhere essentially with a range three attack. That's what this is. Excellent. You net movement like crazy. But also, Chris, let's read some of how this works. The push, if the target is size two or less before damage is dealt, it may be pushed short. It just happens, like you said. So you can push them short away, and depending on their base size, that might be a small base with a short move or a medium base with a short move, depending on their size. But then you can trigger the place. You see what I'm saying? So like you can actually like push them away and even place yourself further than just this range three, right? And plus a one. This is kind of like range three plus a one plus a push if you want it. Like you can really get different places. So a good Moon Knight player could use this in a very strategic way to like do that thing I just said. Go range three, push them, go range one of where they end up at, and then they could move somewhere else, right? And get to a wide point that they didn't think they could get to initially, right? There's a lot of cool things here, but also you could just daze the character,
yeah,
and now they're just pushed off the point and dazed. So next turn, they're going to come back, but they have to move back, and then they only get one attack on you, and you could just sit on the point, right? So there's a lot of versatility with this avatar of Khonshu attack. And let's not forget to mention, Chris, like you said, it's a strength of seven on a three cost character. Very uncommon. That's a very powerful attack on a three cost character. That's very unusual. It doesn't have any cool triggers other than an auto push. But like, I think it only has an auto push because if it had a bunch of wild triggers and stuff, it'd just get out of control for three threat. But this is great.
And it's mystic.
Yeah, it's mystic. Like you're only spending power on this and the chosen of Khonshu to defend against mages. So like you've got a good way to think about how you're using power with Moon Knight. It's on the spender and it's on his defensive tech against mystic attacks. And that's it. So that actually makes him very susceptible to energy and physical attacks. So you will have to use his actions and his multiple personality action of an extra move to stay safe from those. That's kind of his big weakness.
Great point.
We'll talk about his backside, Chris. Nothing changes. So he's pretty simple in the way that we just covered him because you apply all this stuff from the front side to the backside. And that's about it. So he's one of these weird attrition characters that wants to hit and run a lot, you know? And he can't be in the thick of it like a Baron Zemo per se, but when he's ready, he can be in the thick of it and do a lot of damage. And that's, I find that very cool. On top of him having stealth and wall crawler, like you said, being a pretty decent objective runner, like just by nature of the game, right? Like by terrain and movement and stealth, like you have to come to him. And that makes him this unique hybrid of an objective runner and a damage dealer. And it's really a finesse piece because it is hard to know when to switch between those two. But that is the key to his kit.
Excellent. Well said. Well put. Now, I got to ask you, Jesse, where am I going to want to run Moon Knight? Where does he shine the most?
Well, he has two teams that he shines quite well in. Let's talk about those first. So we are in our Midnight Suns series. He's in Midnight Suns, and I think you're going to bring him a lot. He's a three threat character, so he helps you stay affiliated with those cheap characters. But more importantly, Chris, if it's his turn and like you roll multiple personalities with more attacks, like you could attack, double attack with him, and you could end his turn with a Siege of Darkness, right? And do one more attack with him if you want. But also, like, there's nothing wrong with it being outside of his turn and just Moon Knight performing, like, a throwing crescent. And then you say, yeah, now I'm going to go with Moon Knight and see what he does. Like, after you do that Siege of Darkness at the top of your turn, like, we talked about the power of that in our Blade episode.
Yep.
Power of this affiliation to do it whenever they want, top, middle, end of a activation. He's really good for that. He also has some synergy, obviously, with the Midnight Sun's place because he's got some cool movement stuff like you mentioned, but just giving him one more power to spend on placing himself range one helps some of this stuff like, oh, I'm barely in range three. That's fine. I'll bump at the knight outside of range three. I'm in stealth. you know, like things like that. Like it gives him a lot of versatility to his flightiness, which is what you want to do with him. And speaking of his flightiness, he's also affiliated with the Web Warriors. And I find this very cool, Chris.
Well, and that comes from that Brian Michael Bendis run.
Absolutely. Working with those web heads. And, you know, he's an interesting piece for the Web Warriors because he's not very defensive like them. But Miles' leadership gives him a defensive reroll, right? Which helps him.
That's huge for him.
It is definitely huge for him. Also, he's really good in Web Warriors because he's got Wall Crawler and Stealth as well. So he can help them do their objective plays, scoring points. And then when he's ready to do attrition, he can do it. But like when you play him in Web Warriors, you're going to play him more that objective runner flighty style, and you're going to switch to that attrition maybe later in the game than you would in a Midnight Suns team. And that's perfectly acceptable. And I think he's a good Web Warrior piece for this reason. You know, three threat Web Warriors are always welcome. Always welcome on that team. It's huge, honestly, because they've got Miles and Gwen, which they're going to take most games, and now they've got Moon Knight, and that gives them a lot of room to work, because now if they're adding four threats and stuff, they've already got a good base of three threats that they wanted to keep affiliation or just to go wider, because frankly, they love going wide right now, which is a big deal. And also, Chris, I'm not going to forget to mention while we're here with Web Warriors, they give them a defensive reroll, but more importantly, they have a card called All Webbed Up.
Right.
You give all these enemy characters slows, right? And then all Web Warriors that round get additional attack dice against that. Well, that stacks with his multiple personalities as well. So you could be in a weird position where Moon Knight is attacking character with suffering the slow condition, right? He adds two dice to his attack, and somehow he got the multiple personality too. He adds two more dice. So what is he rolling this round? Eight dice.
On Bow Staff.
On Bow Staff. And he's going to get that stagger off.
He's going to get that stagger off. He's going to build power and then possibly be able to do Avatar of Khonshu.
Love it. Yeah. Man. So there's a lot of synergy there. Now, we got to talk about splash affiliations. We always do. We always have fun here. And, you know, we could be at this all day, so I won't keep everyone here too long. But
I could do this all day, Jesse.
That's absolutely right. So Moon Knight's just a solid three threat. Like I talked about, he's this interesting hybrid of objective runner and attrition piece. So with that said, he fits most places. And that's where we're going to kind of leave it. Like, I think he likes wide teams, personally.
Yeah.
And I think he likes teams where he attacks a lot, too.
I feel like he's a no-brainer for the Sam Avenger lists.
Yeah. If you got the splash space, yeah.
Yeah. What are some affiliation powers that really, that Moon Knight likes? I'm assuming X-Force for a reroll.
Yeah. And continuing with that thought process, obviously he loves the Winging It token, which is more rerolls than even X-Force rerolls, right? But on top of that, like, he's not terrible in a lot of these powerhouse wide teams right now in the game we talked about, like Web Warriors, like X-Men, wide X-Men. Like even maybe some Mystique Brotherhood, Chris. But on top of that,
what are you talking about?
What are we talking about?
I'm not sure what you just said. I didn't hear anything.
He's not a terrible criminal on Kingpin's team or even Matt Murdock's Daredevil team because more rerolls, right? So yeah, Chris, he's of course a defender as well, which he's fine for defenders. He's a three threat, which is very strong for them, but they also have some really incredible three threats on their roster. Like, this is the team that has Valkyrie and Iron Fist and Luke Cage, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's a three. You're taking those three every time.
They also have magic. So it's like, I'm not saying magic's better or worse than Moon. I'm just saying like they have so many good three threats. It's interesting. But yeah, he's a defender. He can change his attack types and give out that hex. Seems fine with that excess power he has to spend the power to do that hex and to do
could this. Be useful from time to time. I don't see it getting nearly the amount of efficiency and economy that you do in Midnight Suns and Web Warriors.
That's true. But I mean, when it's clutch, right? Like switching into an energy attack, someone's really weak against it, and it's your personality turn, double rapid fire, six energy dice into them. Like, that's a big rocket attack.
Yeah.
With one action. So it's going to happen when it happens. And I find it very cool. He's thematically on the defenders. But yeah, Chris, I would like to try him in Shield too. You know, just as a body, you know, like they're a wide team as well. And
I have to get in the habit of keeping Shield in my mind now. It's the newest affiliation. I haven't even got to play him yet, which will change that soon. But
we will. Yeah. Very soon.
I got to remember they're here. This is not the year of new affiliations like we've been saying. So it's different.
They're here, Chris, and they have a team that Bucky's affiliated with. Let's go.
The best day of your life, man.
It's exciting. He's not even a favorite character of mine. I know. He's a character I've championed in this game since the beginning, you know?
Exactly.
And let's be honest, he's become a more favorite character for me because of the MCU. It's one of those weird characters that I genuinely love more because of Sebastian Stan's performance and the nuance he brings. And that's really it.
I agree.
I mean, it's much better than the comics in a lot of ways because of that. I think you hit on some of these big teams, Chris, that would be fun to splash them. You know, X-Force, great example. Some of these wide teams we talked about right now, great example. Like Uncanny X-Men or maybe some S.H.I.E.L.D. or even maybe going wider on like a Matt Murdock Criminal Syndicate. These are good places for him. I think, and you're seeing a theme, I think you want to bring him in a wider team because I think you want to have other threats on the board where he doesn't get super laser focused. Does that make sense? Like you don't want him to be one of three or four models, right? And then he just, Moon Knight's, I'm going to blow him up, you know, because can do that.
Okay.
So that's kind of my take on him because he is this sort of finesse piece that's kind of hard to play that oscillates between attrition and objective running. And with that, he kind of needs more pieces around him to take some of the hits for him if possible, because we just talked about it. The longer the game goes on, the more multiple personalities you get, the more power, dice, or action economy you get from that as the game goes on. So he's only better the longer he's around.
Okay. I see what you're saying. He needs to be in these 5-6 wide lists.
Potentially.
So that he can have the ability to go where the multiple personality power kind of takes him.
Yeah.
He can be so more you're impactful. You're not relying on a specific role, more kind of a support role where he's gonna fit in where he's going to be best based on what he rolled for that turn.
Yeah, and with that said, he excels probably going in the middle or end of rounds, right? He's not really an early round guy unless he's in trouble. And then if he's in trouble, you're going to go with him and try to net that extra move action or try to net that, you know, extra attack dice, you know, and then go with him. But most cases, he's on a side point of the map on a flank, scoring you points, and then he's coming in when he's ready. And I think that's perfectly acceptable because we have a lot of three threats in this game that do that very thing very well. And it's cool that he can do it in a different way, Chris. Like Luke Cage on a side point is very different than Moon Knight on a side point, right? Like Luke Cage, you know, okay, that's a problem. My opponent's scoring that, and I probably can't remove him. Moon Knight's, well, that's also a problem because he's in stealth scoring that.
Yeah,
but he also can be a little flighty and maybe do some damage to my team that I'm not ready for, be unpredictable with these personalities. So I don't think people play him enough outside of Midnight Suns and Web Warriors, and I think we should try to because I think he's a really fun character with a good sculpt, and he's kind of different, you know? He's a simple character when you read him initially, but then when you play him over time, you realize he's pretty dynamic and different because of this multiple personality aspect of his character that is truly random.
Very fun.
But Chris, let's close out the segment like we always do. Just talk about his sculpt. My only qualm with this sculpt is that he's on a chimney and a roof, and it has to be put on the ground. It can't be raised up. But guess what? You can raise it up. And I will tell you, that's what I've done. It can be done. Put some rubble under it or a roof or whatever. But I love the pose. I love that he's just kind of staff there looking over the rooftop, and then his cape's flying in the wind. It's pretty evocative.
Yeah, it's presumably a New York sculpt. Doesn't feel very LA. So he's probably during one of his very many times being based in New York. My guess is this probably a earlier interpretation of Moon Knight from the sculpt, but I think play wise he's more of a maybe 90s 2000s 2010s interpretation of Moon Knight. Pick one of those, like volume maybe 5, 3, 6, I don't know.
Yeah, very good.
I'd like to ask AMG about that
question for the wheels in the future.
It's true. Fury's Finest is supported by our wonderful patrons. You can become a Fury's Finest patron by going to patreon.com/Fury's Finest.
Follow us on social media. Find us on Twitter at Fury's Finest Cast and Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch at Fury's Finest. Email us at furiesfinest@gmail.com with any sort of inquiries, ideas, or show collaborations. Leave us reviews on your podcast platform of choice. It genuinely helps us out and helps the show grow.
Thanks to Approaching Nirvana for our intro music. Please help spread the word of our show. Rate, review, and subscribe. Jesse's not wrong, man. It helps us so much. We are constantly humbled by your support, and we still ask for more.
That's funny. Chris, we're 4 months away, 4 months give or take away from being in at this for 3 years, you know? And the only reason we've been at this for 3 years is because of the patrons, is because of the listeners, and because of you at home who subscribe to us. And then you see a new episode pops up in your feed and you give us a listen, you know, it keeps us going and keeps us working. So thank you for that. And if you can share this with your friends, loved ones, family, etc., and get the word out about this game, it'd mean a lot to us because that's our goal. And that's what we do every time we create an episode of the show, is we make an episode for everyone. But Chris, the listeners can, of course, find us on social media. You can find me, Jesse, on Twitter and Instagram at Jesse Aiken. That's just JSSEAKIN. Chris, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Chris Bruffett, ChrisBruffett. Jesse, who's it going to be? Is it going to be Chet? Is it going to be Paulo? Is it going to be Jabari? Is something crazy going to happen? Like Shaedon Sharpe jump up to the number 2 pick? Presti's a wild man. What do you think?
I have no answers, but I love you. You have it, all of it there laid bare. You know,
I only have questions, buddy. I also have no answers.
You know, and isn't that the feature of the draft in sports every time, you know?
That anxiety's got to build.
That's what they do. I'm still so perplexed by the draft format of sports. Like it's just one of those things. I'm still not used to it, Chris, you know, because I'm not a big sports guy. And, you know, every year it's comes weird. Around and it still weirds me out because I just get this loyalty towards any sort of creator or affiliate program or something I follow, you know, and then it's like, no, we kicked that writer out. And you're like, oh my goodness, what? You know, it's like that sort of thing, or it's like, oh, that filmmaker's gone from the Mandalorian team. No way. No way. You know, it's just different in sports. It's very intense in that way. And that is a draw for a lot of people. But for me, it's always caught me off guard. And, you know, I love this feature at the end of every episode where most people drop off and we just have a continuation of Chris's last episode of, you know, the draft or the sports for your Twitter. You know, we just have these mini episodes at the end. It's really quality.
Well, you know, I'd love to be able to talk about basketball on podcasts, so I got to sneak it in where I can.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely agree there.
Then we'll start with wrestling after that. Get ready.
Yeah, I'm not versed in these areas at all, but basketball a little bit. So long time fan of the NBA. I'll catch it when I can. So it's been really fun, Chris. This has been a fun, different episode of the show. And, you know, we got some interesting episodes for you guys planned for the coming weeks. There's a lot. It's kind of in tandem and flux for us where it's like we have episodes written out, planned, ready to go. But then Mini Extravaganza is going to happen and we're going to see what happens with that. And that's going to, of course, usurp some of the things we have planned, and they will come after Mini Extravaganza content from us because that's just the way it is. They could drop some crazy stuff on us in the coming weeks, Chris. So
I kind of think they're going to.
I think you're right on that. It's been really fun and we'll see you guys on the other side of that because there's a lot there. So thanks for listening, true believers.
Excelsior.
Has gotten even stranger than you already know.
At this point, I doubt anything would surprise me.
$10 says you're wrong.